program you are about to hear, Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, is parody, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the Church of the Subgenius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
Tonight on Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, the Lymph Node Institute once again kneels at the altar of miscellaneity. You'll hear Schwartz's, cells that never quite grew into a full show, a Chuck Palahniuk story, and miscellaneous pieces too good to be included in other shows.
So one can make sure of the proper fit. And velour is the most prominent in all the shops in all the gay colors. I shall call it velvet, because velvet by any other name is still velvet. My thoughts also apply to the shirts. A shirt, no matter how frilly it becomes, is still a shirt. I, of course, prefer blouses, and the trend toward blouses is there. The change is there. As if by instinct, his free left hand began to lightly travel up and down the side of his body. When it connected with his soft angora, his hips trembled. Then the hand went up the sweater front and took the breast one at a time. They felt as soft and real as any girl's tits you'd ever felt.
Causes brain damage. Why do you think I'm a sub, huh?
If there's a next day, I'll be the first in line. They better show this time.
Yeah. here. A cell phone blast into their ear, smashing into people like they were dear. These are the terrorists that we should fear.
Cell phones and SUVs. I'm begging you, begging you.
Professor Froppenheimer, what are you doing?
Oh, I am peering into the eyepiece of my microscope to observe the very interesting behavior of a eukaryotic single-celled organism.
Oh.
Little Twilight, a story by Sister Vigilante. It was the summer people quit complaining about the price of gasoline. The summer when they stopped bitching about what shows were on television. On June 24th, sunset was at 8:35. Civil twilight ended at 9:07. A woman was walking uphill on the steep stretch of Lewis Street. On the block between 19th and 20th Avenues, she heard a pounding sound. It was the sound a pile driver might make, a heavy, stomping sound she could feel through her flat shoes on the concrete sidewalk. It came every few seconds, getting louder with each stomp, getting closer. The sidewalk was empty, and the woman stepped with his hands on a white towel. Somewhere in the dark between streetlights, something glass broke. The stomp came again, and a car alarm wailed. The stomp came closer, something invisible against the night. A newspaper box blew over sideways, crashing into the street. The crash came again, she says, and the windows blew out of a glass telephone booth only three parked cars away from where she stood. According to a small item in the next day's newspaper, her name was Teresa Wheeler. She was 30 years old, a clerk at a law firm. By then, the Asian man had stepped back into the deli. He turned the sign around to say, "Closed." Still holding the hand towel, he ran to the back of the store and the lights went out. Then the street was dark, the car alarm wailing. The stomp came again, so heavy and close by, Wheeler's reflection shimmered as the glass in the dark deli windows shook. A mailbox bolted to the curb. It boomed loud as a cannon, then stood shaking, vibrating, dented and leaning to one side. A wooden utility pole shuddered, the cables draped across it rattling against each other, the sparks sprinkling down, bright summer fireworks. A block downhill from Wheeler, the plexiglass side of a bus shelter, the backlighted photograph of a movie star wearing just his underpants, the plexiglass exploded. Wheeler stood, stuck there flat against the brick wall behind her. Her fingers worked into the joints between each brick, her fingertips touching mortar, clinging tight as ivy. Her head held back so hard that when she showed the police, when she told them her story, the rough brick had worn a bald spot in her hair. Then, she said, nothing. Nothing happened. Nothing had gone by in the dark street. Sister Vigilante, telling this, she's worming a knife under each of her fingernails and prying off the nail. Civil twilight, she says, is the period of time between sunset and when the sun is more than 6 degrees below the horizon. That 6 degrees equals about half an hour. Civil twilight, Sister Vigilante says, is different from nautical twilight, which lasts until the sun is 12 degrees under the horizon. Astronomical twilight goes until the sun is 18 degrees below the horizon. The sister says, that something no one ever saw, downhill from Teresa Wheeler, it crumpled the roof of a car waiting at a red light near 16th Avenue. The same invisible nothing wiped out the neon sign for the Tropics Lounge, crushed the neon tubing, and folded the steel sign in half where it hung near a third-floor window. Still, there was nothing to describe. Effect without cause. An invisible riot run amok on Lewis Street, all the way from 20th Avenue to somewhere near the waterfront. On June 29th, Sister Vigilante says, sunset was at 8:36. Civil twilight ended at 9:08. According to a guy working the box office of the Olympia Adult Theater, something rushed past the glass front of his ticket booth. This was nothing he could see,
It was more the sound of air, an invisible bus going past, or an enormous exhale, so close it fluttered the paper money he had stacking in front of him. Just a high-pitched sound. At the edge of his sight, the lights of the diner across the street, they fluttered, blinked, as if something blotted out the whole world for an instant. In the next breath, the ticket taker, he described the pounding sound first reported by Teresa Wheeler. A dog barked somewhere in the dark. It was a walking sound, the kid in the box office would tell police. The sound of something taking huge steps. Just one huge foot he never saw swing past, only as far as one breath away. On July 1st, people were complaining about the water shortage. They were griping about city budget cuts and all the police getting laid off. Car prowls were on the rise, spray paint tagging, and armed robbery. On July 2nd, they weren't. On July 1st, sunset was at 8:34, with civil twilight ending at 9:03. On July 2nd, a woman walking her dog found the body of Lorenzo Curdy, the side of his face caved in. Dead, Sister Vigilante says. Subarachnoid hemorrhage, she says. The moment before he was hit, the man must have felt something. Maybe the rush of air, something, because he put his hands up in front of his face. When they found him, both hands were buried, punched so deep in his face his fingernails had dug into his own crushed brain. On a street, the moment you're between streetlights there in the dark, you'd hear it. The stomp. Some people called it a clomping sound. You might hear a second sound from closer, somewhere nearby, or worse. The next victim would be you. A dry cleaner's on Center Street when nothing hit her square in the middle of her back, breaking her spine so hard it lifted her out of her shoes. On July 17th, when civil twilight ended at 9:01, a man named Glenn Jacobs stepped off a bus and started up Porter Street toward 25th Avenue. What nobody saw, it slammed into him so hard his ribcage collapsed. His chest punched in the way you'd crush a wicker basket. July 25th, civil twilight ended at 8:55. Mary Leah Stanek was last seen jogging along Union Street. She stopped to tie one tennis shoe and check her pulse against her wristwatch. Stanek pulled off the baseball cap she wore. She turned it backward and put it back on, tucking her long brown hair up under it. She headed west on Pacific Street, and then she was dead, her face torn loose from the skull and muscle underneath. Avulsion, Sister Vigilante says. What killed Stanek? It was wiped clean of fingerprints, clotted with blood and hair. They found the murder weapon wedged under a parked car down along 2nd Avenue. It was a bowling ball, the police reported. Those smudged, greasy black bowling balls, you can buy them at any thrift shop for half a buck. You can pick and choose. They have bins of them. Somebody buying over a stretch of time, say, one ball each year from every junk store in town, that person could have hundreds. Even in bowling alleys, it's simple to walk out with an 8-pound ball under your coat. A 12-pound ball tucked in a baby stroller, a barely concealed weapon. The police held a press conference. They stood in a parking lot and someone threw a bowling ball down, threw it hard against the concrete. And the ball bounced. It made the sound of a pile driver far away. It bounced high, taller than the man who threw it. It didn't leave a mark, and if the sidewalk were sloped, the police said, it would keep going, bouncing higher, faster, bouncing downhill in long strides. They threw it down from a third-story window in police headquarters, and the ball bounced even higher. The television news crews got it on tape. Every station played it that night. The city council pushed for a law to paint all balls bright pink, or neon yellow, orange, or green, some color you could see flying at your face down a dark side street late at night, to give people just a moment to dodge before, blam, their face is gone. City fathers, they pushed for a law to make owning black balls a crime. The police called it a non-specific motive killer, like Herbert Mullen, who killed 10 people to prevent Southern California earthquakes, or Norman Bernard, who shot hobos because he thought it would help the economy. What the Federal Bureau of Investigation would call personal cause killers. Sister Vigilante says, the police thought the killer was their enemy. The bowling ball was a police cover-up, people said. The bowling ball was a red herring, a monster wannabe. The bowling ball was a quick fix to keep everybody calm. On July 31st, the sun was 6 degrees under the horizon at 8:49. That night, Daryl Earl Fitzhugh was homeless, sleeping on Western Avenue. Open across his face, Fitzhugh had a paperback copy of Stranger in a Strange Land when his chest was crushed, both his lungs collapsed, and his heart muscle ruptured. According to one witness, the killer came out of the bay, dragging itself over the lip of the seawall. Another witness saw the monster, dripping ooze, squeezing up from the storm sewer. These same people said the forensic evidence was consistent with a hard, backhanded slap from a giant lizard walking on its hind legs. The rib cage collapsed was sure proof the victim was stepped on by some dinosaur throwback. Something dashed past, other people said. Something low to the ground, too fast to be an animal. Or it was a maniac run amok with a 50-pound sledgehammer. One witness, she said we were being smote by God from the Old Testament. Swatted by something with a huge paw, black as the black night. Silent and invisible. Everyone saw something different. What matters, Sister Vigilante says, is people need a monster they can believe in. A true and horrible enemy. A demon to define themselves against. Otherwise, it's just us versus us. Working the tip of the knife blade under another nail, she says, what's important is the crime rate went down. In times like that, every man is a suspect, every woman a potential victim. Public attention went this same way during the Whitechapel murders, during Jack the Ripper. For that 100 days, the murder rate dropped 94% to just 5 prostitutes. Their throats slashed, a kidney half-eaten, guts hung around the room on picture hooks, the sex organs and a fetus taken for a souvenir. Burglaries dropped by 85%, assault by 70%. Sister Vigilante, she says how nobody wanted to be the next victim of the Ripper. People locked their windows. More important, nobody wanted to be accused of being the killer. People didn't walk out at night. During the Atlanta child murders, while 30 kids were strangled, tied to trees, and stabbed, beaten, and shot, most of the city lived in security and safety they'd never known. During the Cleveland torso murders, the Boston Strangler, the Chicago Ripper, the Tulsa Bludgeoner, the Los Angeles Slasher, during these waves of murder, all crime dropped in each city. Except for the show-offy handful of victims, their arms hacked away and their heads found elsewhere. Except for these spectacular sacrifices, each city enjoyed the safest period in its history. During the New Orleans Axeman murders, the killer wrote the local newspaper, the Times-Picayune. On the night of March 19th, the killer promised to kill no one in a house where he could hear jazz music. That night, New Orleans was roaring with music. It's one thing, the sister says, a person getting killed. Somebody with a crushed ribcage trying to catch another breath before they die. They heave and moan, their lips stretched wide, mouthing the air. Somebody with a crushed-in ribcage, she says. You can kneel next to them in the dark street with nobody around to watch. You can see their eyes glaze over. But killing an animal, well, that's different. Animals, she says, a dog. It makes us human. Proof of our humanity. Other people, they just make us redundant. A dog or a cat, a bird or a lizard, it makes us God. All day long, she says, our biggest enemy. How it ended is, one night the monster got a dog. A hairy rag of a little dog on the end of a leash, tied to a parking meter on Porter Street, it stood and barked as the pounding came closer. The closer the sound came, the more the dog barked. A store window webbed into a puzzle of broken glass. A fire hydrant clanked to one side, cracked cast iron, hissing a white curtain of water. The edge of a windowsill explodes in a spray of gravel and concrete dust. A smacked parking meter jiggling in place, rattling the coins inside. A steel no parking sign flaps down, torn from its metal post. The metal post still humming from some invisible impact. One more stomp, and the barking stopped. The monster seemed to disappear after that night. A week went by, and the streets were still empty after dark. A month went by, and the editors found some new horror to put on the front page of the newspaper. A war somewhere else. Some new kind of cancer. On September 10th, sunset was at 8:02. Curtis Hammond was leaving a group therapy session he attended every week at 257 West Mill Street. He was pulling down the knot of his tie when it happened. He'd just opened his collar button. It was when he'd just turned to look up the street. He smiled at the warm air on his face, shut his eyes, and breathed in through his nose. A month before, everyone in town knew him from the front page of the paper, from the television news. He'd pulled a night auditor away from getting killed by the monster, from getting smote by God. He was the hero we didn't want. On September 10th, civil twilight was at 8:34, and a moment later, Curtis Hammond turned toward a noise. His tie loose, he squinted into the dark. Smiling, his teeth shining, he said, "Hello?"
Every day there is a crime committed, 24 hours a day. I need a shot. I need a jigger straight off. Eat it. Shoot to kill. 5150. Ooh, it's
desperate campaigner.
Please look in the
You're
camera.
You're getting really desperate.
Why aren't you answering the question?
Senator, by the rules.
You're a negative campaigner, that's why.
Senator Santorum, by the rules that you have agreed to.
$135,000
a year.
And I get results that you don't get.
$135,000 a year.
Rick, you vote with the president 98% of the time.
Ken, will you not get this man to answer a question?
Senator,
he hasn't answered a question on Social Security. He won't answer questions.
Senator Santorum,
we're going to answer all
by the rules that you have agreed to, along with Mr. Casey. Please, gentlemen.
I hope Rick answers the question that you pose, which is why won't you be straight with the people?
I just was.
Just pay the money back.
I paid $100,000 in taxes.
You ripped the taxpayers off $55,000.
I paid more than $55,000 in state taxes.
Pay it back.
I paid over $30,000 in local income taxes. I paid over $20,000 in real estate taxes.
Pay the money back.
Why don't you pay? I'll tell you what.
$55,000.
Why don't we make a deal? How about you paying the $135,000 back that you get a year?
We don't make deals here, Rick. We don't make deals.
Pay the $135,000 that you
tell the people what you're going to do.
Man on dog's back.
Doberman is a dangerous mutt. He is an attack dog. He will jump on you and bite the ish out of you. He will eat your ass up. Beware of dog. 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 This Doberman pissed out my house. He licked up my living room. He put my bed is still up. He will tear your ish up. Beware of dog. 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 Yeah! an ounce of bucket meat. He'll bring you to the ground. Beware of dog. 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 Ruck over London. Ruck over Chicago. Oscar Mayer, you got a winner roast.
If you wanted a cup of tea with rose wallpaper, the dog turns. So many and so...
At this point in our researches, we intersected the Novia police.
Yes, when the going gets really tough, they call in the old doctor to quiet the marks. And he just raises his old blue hands and brings them down slow, touching all the marks right where they live, and the marks are quiet. But remember, ladies and gentlemen, you can only call the old doctor once. So be sure when you call him, this is really it. Because if you call the doctor twice, he quiets you. The old doctor reeled out onto the platform. Then he heard the screaming marks, and he steadied himself, and he drew all of it into him, and he stood up very straight and calm and gray as a wise old rat, and lifted his old blue hands shiny over the dirt, and he brought them down slow in the setting sun, and all the marks just stood there quiet. His cold old hands on their wrists and ankles, hands cold and blue as liquid air on wrist and ankle, just frozen there in a heavy blue mist of vaporized banknotes. So there they stand like dummies. They are dummies. And you let your heavy, cold, blue hands fall through them, clunk, as word dust falls from demagnetized patterns, your spirals holding wrist and ankle where we came in. Now, some wise characters think they can call the old doctor twice. You see, son, in this business, you always have to find an angle.
If you would like more information on the Church of the Subgenius, you could write to them at P.O. Box 181417, Cleveland Heights, Ohio 44118-1417, or visit them online at subgenius.com.
You have heard the Rudy Schwartz Project performing Albuquerque Ball, the Lymph Node Institute performed Bob Sells, Slip performed Cell Phones and SUVs, then L and I again with Ze Flagellum Whips It, we heard from Rudy Schwartz again with Sira Sira Bin, and then Chuck Palahniuk's story Civil Twilight, followed by Eraserhead performing Eat It Up. Guess what show that didn't make it on? Then Rudy Schwartz performing Can I Buy You a Taco? Followed by a little farewell to Rick Santorum, The Stooges performing Now I Wanna Be Your Dog, and Wesley Willis performing Beware of Dog. And the last thing you heard was William Burroughs talking about the old doctor, with a little warning to those who work with popular forces in any magnitude. And we close this evening with a word, or two, or three, or perhaps even more, from the Association of International Glaucoma Societies.
That exploded posed little time, so I'll say good night.
Yetis and simpletons, poison ghouls, put your hands on the radio, because all I have to say to you in this minute will not fit in your ear holes, and if it did, the pressure would be so intense it would rupture your brain straight out of your nostrils. I'm here to talk about a fantabulous product, an earth-shattering, bone-jarring, buzz-nuzzling product that will solve every problem in your life forever. Bob Slacktime Funhouse scours away those niggling feelings of doubt, shame, and responsibility. Bob Slacktime Funhouse will take away an entire hour of your life forever, every Saturday night at 1 a.m. right here on WREK Atlanta. And that's not all. Listen to one show one time, you're 1 hour closer to your great reward. Listen to one show 10 times, you're 10 hours closer to your great reward. Listen to 10 shows 10 times, and you're 100 hours closer to your great reward. That great reward is Slack. The conspiracy is stolen away, and Jeroboam Dobbs has come to bring you back your Slack for a small funding fee. Stop looking, stop caring, stop brushing your teeth, stop getting out of bed in the morning. You have found the reason, and that reason is Bob's Slack Time Funhouse every Saturday night at 1 a.m. right here on WREK Atlanta. You can't pull the wool over your own eyes until Bob sells you that wool, and Bob can't sell you the wool until he shears the sheep. And you can't hear the sheep if you're listening to Bob's Slack Time Funhouse. That's right, folks. Don't drown out the screams of your victims, the voices in your head, the complaints of your spouse, parents, and/or children. All great works of literature, all classical works of music are hereby superseded by Bob's Slack Time Funhouse. So says Jeroboam Dobbs every Saturday night at 1 a.m. right here on WREK Atlanta. You can't not want it. It doesn't matter if you like it, because it likes you. Just listen once, and it will follow you around for the rest of your life.